Blog Talk Radio.
Well, yes, I indeed want to be more. And happy Sunday to each and every one of you. My chat room is empty. I think everybody's off celebrating the Super Bowl, but I hope you all will stop by and visit with us. We are going to have a very tranquil and relaxing evening. I need to say happy birthday to all of my Facebook friends and family who have been celebrating birthdays in January and in February. I have been missing sending out birthday wishes to your guys and everything like that. So happy birthday, everybody. Who is celebrating a birthday, you know I love you all very, very, very much. Well, We are up for a treat. I would go ahead and say we are up for a treat tonight. Tonight, my guest is going to be a local poet from here in Connecticut. His name is Robert Garaval, and he will be calling in about 10 minutes. And based on what I've learned from this amazing gentleman, he has been writing poetry for over 25 years. He have not published any yet. He uses them in a unique way to enhance the lives of others. And he will talk about that. So in the meantime, while I wait on him to call, and I told him to call in 7:15, this way I'll get all my housekeeping through and be ready to just roll into the evening of pausing for poetry. Now, I want to tell you that I'm doing a webinar series on February the 8th, the 15th, and the 22nd. And the theme of this webinar is A New You Without Plastic Surgery or Dieting. A lot of you have been saying to me, oh, Daphne, you look so good. You have lost weight off. What diet you on? Oh, my God, you look so good. You look like you lost 20 years and all of that. Well, the time has come that I am going to be sharing some of the secrets and the rituals and practices that I have been engaged in that has brought on this amazing transformation in my energy, in my image, and just an overall new me. So I want you to go to Daphne Clark Hudson Empowers and register there. If you register early bird between now and the 6th, you can register for all three series for $87.97. If you register after, if you register after the 6th and you won't register for the package price, you can do so for $97.97 for all three webinars. And if you just want to sign up for one per day, you pay $37.97. So please go to DaphneClarkHudsonEmpowers.com and register for the webinar and share it with your friends. Okay? Now, I know that majority of us, we are looking for funding for our businesses, that we can take our business to the next level. Well, I tell you, you will not want to miss this episode coming up this Wednesday, because I'm going to have Mr. Edward Barnes from Washington, D.C., who is a funding consultant. And they specialize in startup business or struggling business. And he's going to be my guest on Wednesday's show. So I encourage you to join live. And just make sure you tell everybody, anybody who is struggling and looking for funding, they would want to come on to this show. And listening to the show on Wednesday. And remember last Wednesday, my honored guest, Mr. Raj Tedler, he offered an emotional intelligence assessment tool to all the people who were listening. It's $150 for this assessment. He gave it for free to all my listeners. All you need to do is to send me an email, and in the subject line you put emotional intelligence assessment, and I will send you the link to access that. So listen, claim it. It's $150 that you will not have to spend, and it is going to give you a wealth of information that will help you through the 2013. So make sure you send me the email at dynamicdaphne1@gmail.com and put in the subject line emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence assessment. Now, if you live in Bridgeport, Stratford, Trumbull area, anywhere up there in the Bridgeport area, I'm looking for some good women and men in that area. I have got an offer to do another show over there in Bridgeport. So in order for me to be able to produce the show over there, I need to have team. So I'm looking for a team of maybe 10 or 12 people. This way we'll have enough people to rotate. So I'm looking for a team of between 10 and 12 people to be trained over there in Bridgeport to help me produce the new show that I am going to be starting over there. I am also looking for volunteers for my Danbury crew. I tell you, I am short all over. I'm looking for volunteers to come into the Danbury studio as well to help me with the show there. And even on this radio show, I'm looking for volunteers. I'm looking for producers. I'm looking for marketers. I'm looking for administrative assistants. I'm looking for salespeople to sell at an attractive commission. So if you're interested in any of the things that I have mentioned and you want more details, would you please email me at dynamicdaphne1@gmail.com. dynamicdaphne1, the numeral 1, at gmail.com. And that's if you want to volunteer at Bridgeport, the radio, or Danbury. That's the same email that you use to claim your emotional intelligence assessment tool that Mr. Radish Tadler gave away last Wednesday on the show. And remember, this Wednesday coming, if you are looking for funding for your business, I'm having a funding expert from Washington, D.C. to be on the show to tell you how they can help you and what it is you can do for they can do for you and your business. So you will want to be on the air and tell all your friends and everybody who you know is looking for that extra amount of money to put into their business. And last but not least, remember that I am doing the webinar series, A New You Without Plastic Surgery or Dieting. And that series will begin on the 8th of February. It will also be on the 15th of February. And the last one in the series will be on the 22nd of February. This is an hour. It runs from 7:30 to 8:30, and you're going to learn how I reduce my weight from 220 pounds to 165. You're going to learn my daily rituals. You're going to learn how to be sure your diet consists of live foods. You're going to understand the role of a healthy colon. You're going to discuss what foods are best for you. You're going to learn what spices are good for you. We're going to talk about juicing and how it can improve your life. And we're going to talk about how you can convert your kitchen into a gourmet cookery. Now, you're probably saying, who is this webinar for? If you are looking in the mirror and shouting, oh my God, and you look at your mirror and, oh my God, that's for you. Are you sick and tired of dieting? Are you buying every product from the late night infomercial, taking them without results? Are you starving and depriving yourself of delicious foods? Are you losing sleep at night? Are you tired? Are you stressed out? Have you answered yes to some or any of those questions? Then this is for you. So make sure that you sign up for the webinar. It is going to be well worth it for you, because I know there are lots of people out there on yo-yo diets, and they are not having any results. And I have found something that is amazing. You know, this lifestyle awakening is amazing, amazing. And it's doing great things in my life. So I am very, very excited about the webinar series coming up. And I am very much looking forward to having you participate in the program. So I am waiting on my honored guests to call in, and I think I will probably need to call, because he's probably all taken up in the Super Bowl, and he is not knowing that it's time to call in. So I am going to be calling him and just make sure that he's going to be here and he did not stood us up. So we're going to be have him ringing all live on the air and everything. So okay. Okay. Well, we dialed and it failed. I have never used this to call out a guest before. So I am just hoping he did not forget. So I'm going to try to call again and see, because we are looking forward to the poetry tonight. Each and every one of us, we are looking forward to that tonight. So let's see what happens here. I think you can all hear it ringing.
This is Robert. Thanks for calling. Please leave a message and a telephone number, and I'll get back to you.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hello, Mr. Gavrel. It is Dynamic Daphne from the A New Day radio show. We have invited you to be a guest tonight, and you're supposed to be calling in at 7:15. It is now 7:20, and we have not heard from you, so we're calling. The number that you need to call is 646-915-8166. 646-915-8166. And we look forward to hearing you call, because we are all looking forward to hearing and sharing in your great work of poetry. Thank you. Okay, well, I just left a message, and we're hoping that he will call in. So in the meantime, why don't I play a song for our enjoyment?
My letter shall be greater than my past. I will be blessed more than I can ask. Spite of all that has been done, my best is yet to come. And my letter shall be greater. My letter shall be greater. My letter shall be greater than my past. My letter shall be greater than all of my past. I will be blessed more than I can ask. All that has been done, my best is yet to come. And my letter shall be greater. My letter shall be greater. My letter shall be greater than my past.
Okay, that was Elder Piero Maranza out of Texas. Oh, I didn't even call him yet to say Happy New Year. Oh, I got to call him to say Happy New Year. Well, listen, while we wait on the live poet to walk in, or to call in, rather, I am going to reach back to, you know, it's good to have a great library. So I have a book here, Always Follow Your Dreams, a collection of poems that inspire and encourage your dreams, by Susan Polis Schwartz. And I will start off with the poem on Reaching for Rainbows. We don't ever take chances. We won't reach the rainbows. If we don't ever search, we'll never be able to find. If we don't attempt to get over our doubts and fears, we will never discover how wonderful it is to live without them. If we don't go beyond difficulty, we won't grow any stronger. If we don't keep our dreams alive, we won't have our dreams any longer. But if we can take a chance now and then, seek and search, discover and dream, grow and go through each day with the knowledge that we can only take as much as we can give, and we can only get as much out of life as we allow ourselves to live, then we can be truly happy. We can realize a dream or two along the way, and we can make a habit of reaching out for rainbows and coloring our lives with wonderful days. The next poem is Reach for the Star. Do not take anything as being forever, because forever is only as long as today. Know that the people who are the most, but most who need the least, that we are at our strongest when life is at its worst, and at our weakest, then life no longer offers a challenge. That is the wiser not to expect, but to hope. For in expecting, you ask for disappointment, whereas in hoping you invite a surprise, and unhappiness doesn't come from not having something you want. And I think my honored guest is calling in. So, hello, Mr. Garval. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good, thanks. How are you?
I am wonderful. I thought you forgot about me, so I'm glad I called you.
Oh, no, I got home a little later, but I am
okay.
So glad I'm tuned in to say hello. How are you tonight?
I am wonderful. I am wonderful. And I was just saying to the listeners, it is a wonderful thing to have a great library. So I thought I'll grab one of my books of poetry in case you had traded us in for the Super Bowl. So I am so honored to have you as my distinguished guest. And without any further delay, I want to ask you to please introduce yourself to the listeners.
My name is Robert Garifel, and I live in Connecticut in the ruralness of Brookfield, and I am a poet.
Wonderful, wonderful. And you are not just a poet. You have been a poet for how long?
I have been a poet probably for all my life, when I be officially designated as a poet?
Yeah, when did you pen your first poem? Maybe I should have asked. That's a better question, because you don't just become a poet. You are, as you said, your whole life. So maybe then let me rephrase my question and ask, can you recall when you penned your first poem?
It's funny that you ask that question. I remember maybe 25 years ago, I was on a vacation in Daytona Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And I was staying with friends in a house. And there were many of us staying in this one house. Mm-hmm. And we were all young teenagers, and we were all staying in this one house. And I would get up in the morning, and I would put little sonnets by the heads of each person that was staying with me. And that's mm-hmm. when I really began on my poetic life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
But it became, it reached, it really, its pinnacle when a few years ago I picked up a book by Henry David Thoreau. And mm-hmm. I said, oh, my God. And I just happened to trip upon this book inadvertently. And it mm-hmm. was called Thoughts of Thoreau, edited by Edwin Teal. And mm-hmm. I read into the life of the mystique who lived mm-hmm. on Walden Pond and wrote beautiful verse about nature. And mm-hmm. I soon turned my thoughts and my life towards the beauty of nature.
Mm-hmm. I was telling the listeners at the top of the hour when I went live that during my conversation with you, I learned that you have not published any of your works. And you recall having around about 2,000 pieces. However, even though you are not in the bookstores, you are not on the internet with any of your work, you do something amazing with your work each and every day. Would you like to elaborate on that to let the listeners know what you do with your poetry?
Thank you so much, Daphne, for that. I really was not my initiative to ever have my published. Mm. I became as a form of catharsis, a form of self-expression. And I've written many poems. I don't think it's really important that you have your poems published. As more, I think it is a form of enhancing your being. I don't really have any of my poems published. You have to remember the famous poetess Emily Dickinson, never really endeavored to have her poems published. She was more interested in revealing herself, basic to herself, as a form of self-expression. That's my endeavor. And I think it's called the total fulfillment of personality, the total development of a personality. And that's what I think poetry does. I think it's a very, very constructive way of promoting your personality and the person that you are.
However, with that being said, all that is accurate, but you are not only using them for your benefit. You do something that's unique. What do you do? Who else does have the privilege of being benefited from your poetry?
Well, I do share my poems with people in different venues. And one of the things I do is I read poetry at assisted living. This is avenue which I really enjoy. I love going out and reading poems, but I like to tell people in my audience and people over the airwaves that I like to make the words pop off the page and come alive. It's very non-academic. I think people remember going to school and maybe finding the English teacher or the professor of poetry somewhat mechanized in his approach to poetry. I take, if the audience has seen the movie The Dead Poets Society, when Rob Williams would get up in front of students and make poetry feel as if it is a passion in life, almost as important as breathing. That's what I like to do. I don't like to make it non-academic. I like people to get out of the poems what they get out of it, but I like to think that I'm not reciting these words as a pure, mechanized behavior. but I want the word to come alive.
To mean something, yes. And what are some of the feedbacks that you have got over the years as you read your poem, your poetry, and share it with all the different communities in the assisted living space?
Well, that's a very interesting question that you asked that, because I often think that when I read a poem, for instance, John Greenleaf, 30 Years Barefoot Little Boy, when I read that poem, the response I get with poetry is it conjures up memories of of things, of days gone by, of the way life should be, and it really puts people in a perspective of things in life that, by and large, according to the mass media, have gone by the wayside. And those are the pure, uncommercial aspects of life, which hold so much value. And I emphasize, basically, with the audience, that the audience, with the people that I recite poems with, poems I find to be significant, and not poems that are so abstract that you cannot really get to their meaning. And I appreciate the poets, because poetry, if it means something to the poet, that's most important. If it means something to the audience, that's an additive.
Yeah, it's like It's like the icing on the cake, you know?
Right, exactly.
I want to give you an opportunity to share some of your work, and you can take that opportunity now, and as you pause, then I will interject with some questions. So you've got the mic.
Thank you so much. Well, let me see. Where can we begin?
From the beginning?
Where do I begin?
That's always a good place.
I'm going to answer my own question. One of the poems, I've written so many poems, and thank you so much for that, but I've written so many poems, and, you know, I don't think poetry is so much so much form as it is expression. In other words, you take the famous poet E.E. Cummings. He was very, very unconventional and unorthodox. Most of his poems were based on a very, very almost defiant structure. He would start a lot of his poems with small letters, and there would be no sentences. So it's an expression of the self, and if the poet is expressing himself, that's the most important thing. If it comes across as a plus to the audience, that's a secondary plus. But it's got to come across as a plus first to the poet. I believe that. Now, having said that, I guess maybe I can recite one of the more frequently expressed poems that I use with the public to express my poetry. And this was written a while back when I was in Cape Cod. I was sitting on the beach, and the poems just flowed into my head. The beach has a tendency of kind of like purging the system and getting those poetic juices flowing, at least in my metabolism. I was sitting on the beach in Cape Cod on Provincetown, and I'm watching people walking by, and a lot of them were arm in arm. And I was sitting there all by, in quotes, my own lonesome self. I wasn't lonesome, but I was by myself. And I said, oh, I am not lonely, because the poem will prove otherwise. The beach is for lovers in love, and lovers like me, in love with the sea. So that was just a little sonnet that I happened to coalesce in my mind. And I said, well, the beach is for people that really are truly in love with each other, but it's also for people like me, who is physically by himself.
Can enjoy the serenity of it and appreciate the fact that
but
the
I have
creative juice.
Right. I had a love of the sea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that you know, that, and that's nothing that is extremely, it's not something that is extremely unusual, but when you find your tempo in nature, your
mm-hmm.
mind create beautiful feelings and beautiful, I should say, murmurings of
mm-hmm.
your essence in
mm-hmm.
nature, or your essence mm-hmm. in the scheme of things. And
so let me ask you this question. Do you get majority of your inspiration for writing during the outdoor?
I do. Yes, that's a fair observation to say. Yes, I consider myself to be almost as one would say a transcendentalist, much in the mode of those people that went before us, like Ralph Waldo Emerson, Louise May Alcott, Brownston Alcott, Louise's father, Henry David Thoreau, Ralph Waldo Emerson. I find, unfortunately, today that the media has a tendency of constricting one's poetic imagination. We are today bombarded with so much in the media and so much in technology that we sometimes lose grasp of the significance of simplicity. And
yeah,
I don't want to sound like I'm waxing.
Yeah, but the other thing, though, with what you just said, is that that's the society we live in. So then we have to make a decision and take the responsibility for whether or not we are going to be overpowered by everything that's happening around us. Are we going to be taking the responsibility to know that I am isolating and protecting myself, so therefore I'm severing myself from everything else that is happening? Because this is a topic and a behavior that can just take total control of us if we allow it to. So we got to just know, well, I am my responsibility. So regardless of what's going on around me, I am putting up this shield around me where this is going to be my practices, this is going to be my habit. It doesn't matter what anybody else is doing or saying.
Right, and that's a very, very salient point. Unfortunately, I think sometimes we live in a civilization that promotes technological progress over emotional progress.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there has to be a striking distinction, because the media today can clutter people's minds with so much that it lacks the authenticity, and people are their life's brand. So how does a person get to that point where they uncram their lives? You know, that has to be made sometimes on an individual basis.
Exactly.
And
because
maybe with me it was just a matter of luck, I guess.
I don't even buy into that word luck, because I really don't know what that means. I strongly believe and support the fact that each and every one of us, we are authentic, unique beings. And because of that, we have the responsibility to take control of the things that's going to add value to our lives. So for example, you could have been sitting home for 25 years watching the TV and doing all of that stuff. Instead of that, you took your pen and you create. Regardless of what is inspiring you to do that, you took the pen, you have put pen to paper, It sounds as if you create some amazing poems, and now you are using them to enhance the lives of people who, I think it's fair enough to say, sometimes they have given up hopes because sometimes they don't even have family who comes to see them. They are like cast away or whatever. So look on how you are dismantling what the media is doing, because those people could have been sitting in that community room watching the television. Instead of that, they can come into that community room if they choose to and listen to your poetry. So,
poetry in its pure form, I don't believe poetry has really any commercial value. So, in that essence, it's really quite a deviation from what we're used to in our mass culture. However, looking at it from a pure aspect, it is really a great source for not only the revelation of oneself, but the fulfillment of what really is essential outside of what society is telling people that they need. In the context of what I consider to be a commercialized Western civilization we're living in.
Mm-hmm. I want for you to share, because we have 43 minutes remaining,
okay.
And I would love for you to share some more pieces. So
okay. Just
go ahead and share some pieces, because I want people to...
Yeah,
I want people to have their life enhanced.
Okay, I would be more than happy to do that. Well, I guess maybe instead of quoting from my own poems, I'll use my posthumous mentor, Henry David
Thoreau. No. We want your work.
Okay, well...
Have made their names already, but we want your work.
Okay,
We are featuring you.
Yeah. I will put an asterisk, and I will give them credit for what I have been able to write because of them.
That's
right. Okay, let's say in the year of October at 2007, I was at Lake Kenosha, and it was in October, and I was just fascinated by the beauty of the lake. Autumn was in its pinnacle, and I was looking at the swans, and I'm saying, I wonder where they go and for winter. So I wrote this poem, which was called The Flight of the Swans.
Mm.
And it was, once again, it was written because of the poetry that I had read Longfellow, Thoreau,
mm-hmm.
Emerson, Dickinson. These are the people that inspired my thoughts
mm-hmm.
that lovely day in October. The swans came by at the morning's end. My mood grew reverent from me to them. Ascending from the water's edge, their mighty wings fan the air from which they fled. I wonder where perhaps they go to shelter from the year's first snow. This inquiry I did not know, but upon return in December's snow, I shall think of swans and where they go. That was a poem I wrote, and I really didn't know where the swans went for December.
Beautiful, beautiful.
The poetic juices were flowing.
Flowing,
yeah. Why were they flowing? Mm. Because I had read Thoreau, Emerson.
Mm.
I had read Longfellow, and these people inspired me that day to write along their lines, if I could be so immodest.
All right, so continue sharing.
Well, let me see if I can think of any others. Well, I've written so many, I can't really recall. I don't have them in front of me in black and white. But another one I wrote, I do have a love affair with the ocean. And one of the ones I wrote when I was on the ocean was I won't title it, but I will title it after I read it. I took a walk along the beach and plucked these treasures from my feet, swept ashore by the surf of the deep sea to give my day such joy and glee. The name of that poem was called Seashelling. I was collecting seashells on the beach.
Mm.
So,
beautiful.
I paused. I sat on the beach. I saw the seashells. I walked. And I picked up the seashells. And they gathered in me such beautiful, beautiful feelings. Why did that happen? Well, I'm looking at them saying, they are beautiful. They are beautiful. But once again, I all relate this back into another time when people took time to do those things and made them big things. I'm not saying that people don't do that today, but it's certainly
not too
really.
Many. Not too
well,
many.
Well, I'm not saying, I don't know if they do or they don't, but see, it's not really something that is put on a priority for people's lives.
Yeah, even the children now, it's like a chore to get them to go outside because everybody's so engulfed in all the technology and everything and the stuff that is inside. You know, I grew up in the Caribbean, and you know, we never have toys. You know, we were running outside and playing, and the cars used to be a piece of a stick and a tin cover off a can or something. And we would play and have fun outside and just playing. But it's not like that now. Kids have all the technology and everything, and they're inside. So not too much priority shared on that.
I think that's one of the real dilemmas that we live in today is that people don't know how necessarily to sort out what is really essential. Now, I sound immodest when I say that.
Robert, I don't think it's that they don't know. I think they chose not to do that. It's all boils down to choices. People know. But, you know, people want to be like the Joneses and they want to do this and they want to do that. And they're really not looking at how it impacts them or sometimes impedes them, you know? So people know, but people choose not to follow through.
There's a big emphasis today on how the media controls people's behavior. And if you look at the media today, when I say the media, I'm talking purely, mostly about commercial TV.
I'm going to stop you because the media show is a show for a different time. So we are on this show this evening, and as I name it, Pause for Poetry, and we just need to keep our conversation around that. The media show is a very good show, but not for tonight. I promised the viewers that we were pausing for poetry, and we
line. I would encourage the listeners to do, and not that I'm trying to pontificate, but I would tell them to pick up a poem and pick up a book of poetry and just delve into it and see what the poet has to say on what life is about and just explore the possibilities of poetry. I think poetry is a great resource, as I said earlier.
Yeah, there's a poet in each and every one of us, but if we
I think so.
If we
yeah,
don't
and I
attempt,
think it's bad
yeah.
when people, you know, when people say, I don't know how to write poetry, well, I look at that and say they do not know how to express themselves.
Express,
and that's what's even better. Poetry is that I was a member once of the Connecticut Poetry Society only for one night. I went there for one night, and I went there, and I did, and I did
you
not
were,
return.
You were not a member. You were a visitor for one night.
And I was visiting for one night, and I went there, and it was really, really kind of funny because I sat there, and I read one of my poems, and the director of the poet, Connecticut Poetry Society said, Robert, why don't you change that word to this word and that word to that word?
Oh, my God. But those are your experiences.
Yeah, right. And I said, well, you know, if I did that, then you would have to co-author the poem, which I don't really have any time with. But it's an expression of myself, not yourself. And so I think people sometimes subject themselves in our very competitive society to the whims of other people's interpretation. It doesn't matter whether or not the poem that you write means anything
to anybody,
to another person, as long as it means something to the person that writes it.
It's like
the comma's in the right place or the period's in the right place, whether or not it rhymes, if it means something to the person and it's an expression of the person, it doesn't mean it has to have significant rhyme or significant structure. If it means something to the person.
Would you say that poetry can be considered as a type of healing?
Oh, most certainly. I do think it has a form of healing. It's something that I think anytime you can express yourself in writing, a lot of times I'm in bed at night and I'm thinking of something wonderful and I don't write it down. And I'm saying, oh my God, I get up the next morning and try and write it down, but it's totally, it vanished. I think it's a form of healing. I don't know necessarily poetry, but writing. I think writing is important.
Writing is
right.
There.
It doesn't have to be what we call poetry. It has to be expressions of yourself, whether it's writing a letter to a friend about that as an expression, or writing something for the newspaper in the form of a letter to the editor, an expression of your inner self that you're sharing with other people. Poetry is just one form.
Right. Would you say that any portion of your work is spiritually inspired as you look over the many poems that you have penned?
Are they spiritually inspired? I would say without a doubt. Most of the things I write about have, I think, some type of spiritual implications to them. I wrote a poem right now that I don't have privy to about a lady that I met this morning, and it was called The Universality of Poetry.
Say that again?
Poetry supposedly is a universal language. And I wrote a poem concerning a lady earlier in the day who didn't speak English. And I said, well, maybe my poetic responses will convey to her the message of poetry, which is a teardrop, a smile, or everything in between. Because we all have something in common, whether we live in Ethiopia or whether we live in Ireland or whether we live in South America, and that's called laughter, and that's called joy, and that's called sorrow. Those are universal attributes that most poets are fodder for most poets. Those are major subjects of most poets. Now, they're expressed in different languages, but the common element is their human characteristics.
I would love for you to share some more poems. We have 30 minutes remaining. So I don't know. It sounds as if you do not have access to a lot of yours.
No, I can tell you one thing. I do have access in my mind because...
Go ahead. Share them with the listeners. They are wanting to hear. I build these pieces up, so most certainly want to hear more than two pieces.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to express my fondness for poetry.
You're welcome.
Which I really feel I could talk about it for hours and hours. I have to say that I have been blessed in the fact that when I go and read these poems at various venues, they become mm-hmm. part of my personality as mm-hmm. much as my breathing is. So if I could, I'd like to recite some for memory. And
of course, that's fine. That's what most poets do anyhow.
Well, my parents' generation and their parents would often say, I remember we had to memorize poems when we were in school.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they still do that, but because I've recited...
I don't know. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they do, but it because I've recited them so many times, they have become second nature to me as breathing. So I will recite, let me see. It's a little lengthy, but it will take a small chunk of my remaining time. And it's called The Children's Hour. It's a beautiful poem that was written. Can we do it?
Sure, go ahead.
It's Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. And by the way, Mr. Wadsworth's middle name was Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. That was his wife's maiden name. And in those days, a lot of gentlemen took on their wife's maiden. I'm sorry?
I didn't hear what you said.
A lot of the poets in those days, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, was his wife's maiden name.
Beautiful. So they should still do that nowadays.
Well, so when he got married, he became not Henry Longfellow. He became his wife's maiden name, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
Beautiful.
So that was an interesting thing that a lot of people today would be very, very interested to know. But he wrote a poem called The Children's Hour. Now, I recite this poem, and it makes me appreciate children that much more after I have learned the beauty of his poem. He was sitting in his parlor, and those days maybe he was taking notes with his quill, and maybe he was just writing his memoirs. When his three children were going to take him by surprise and play a prank on Mr. Longfellow, he foiled their attempt. But he was so impressed by the playfulness of his children, he shortly thereafter wrote this poem called The Children's Hour, and I'd be more than pleased to recite it right now. It goes like this. Between the dark and the daylight, when the night is beginning to lower, comes a pause in the day's occupation that is known as the children's hour. In the chamber I hear above me the pitter-patter of little feet, the sounds from a door that is open, of voices soft and sweet. From my study I see descending the broad hall stairs great Alice laughing Allegra and Edith with the golden hair. A whisper and then a silence, yet I know by their merry eyes they are plotting and planning together to take me by surprise. A sudden rush from the hallway, a sudden raid from the stairs, by three doors left unguarded, they enter my castle wall. They climb up into my turret over the arms and back of my chair, for if I try to escape, they surround me, for they seem to be everywhere. They almost devour me with kisses, their arms about me entwined, until I think of the Bishop of Beguine and the Mouse Tower of the Rhine. You think, O blue-eyed bandito, because you have scaled my wall, that such an old mustached man as I am is no match for you at all? I have you fast in my fortress and will not let you depart, but I will put you down into the round tower, into the dungeon of my heart. And there I will keep you forever, yes, forever and a day, till the wall shall crumble to ruin and molder to dust away. And I think the poem is saying something very important. He was so inspired by those three little children that came into his parlor in what he called the children's hour, he wrote that poem about those three little children, and he titled it The Children's Hour. As you
beautiful.
Well know, children can be very playful and very endearing, And I think William Wordsworth said it so very, very emphatically and so effectively. The child is the father of man. We can learn much from the child, more so than 1,000 libraries.
That's right. And but the thing people grow up in a society where they don't listen to children. They don't listen to little people anymore.
I think we're putting a blanket on that, but that's I don't think that's too far fetched. I think we listen. We don't listen to what they have to say.
And they have a lot to say, a lot of valuable insight that they have, but people don't want to listen. You can continue to share a couple more. We have 24 minutes. You can continue to recite some more. I want to get as many pieces in as possible.
Oh, my God. Well, let's see. I have a lot in my memory bank, but that's one that I wrote. And that, I think that will give the listenership here somewhat of a feeling towards what the power of poetry there is in the beauty of children. How those three little children in their playfulness. I can remember when I was with my father and having a good time and didn't really write a poem about it or never having my father write a poem about it. But it all came back in the poem of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, The Children's Hour. Let's see if we could do another one. Let's skip forth. And we'll go to William Wordsworth, who was an English poet, and he lived in England. And he was very, very close with his sister, and they would walk, and they would walk, and they would walk. According to legend, in late 1700, William Wordsworth walked across Great Britain. And in his travels, he saw many beautiful things. And one of the things he saw were daffodils. Daffodils, 10,000 daffodils he saw. It's hard to visualize 10,000 daffodils in our era. But he saw these 10,000 daffodils. He didn't count them. I'm sure he didn't. But he's using poetic license to describe what he saw that day he walked as lonely as a cloud. And the poem is called I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud. And it's a poem for spring, which is a little untimely, but it will give us something to look forward to. And it's called I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud by William Wordsworth. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils. Beside the lake, beneath the trees, wavering and fluttering with the breeze, continuous as the stars that shine and sparkle in the Milky Way, they stretched in never-ending line along the margin of a bay. 10,000 saw I at a glance, tossing their heads in sprightly dance. The waves beside them danced, but they, the daffodils, updid the waves with glee. A poet could help but not be gay in such a jousted company. I gazed and gazed, but little thought what wealth to me the show had brought. For oft when on my couch I lie, they flash upon the inward eye, which is the bliss of solitude. And then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodils.
Beautiful.
Well, that's a beautiful poem that obviously meant a lot to William Wordsworth. And you know something? It was transferred down 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 generations to people like myself that now go out in nature and not only see the daffodils, but how about the snowflakes?
That's right. You can just connect with something else and know that
it all makes you. So the people that have gone before us in those times.
It's a legacy.
I'm sorry.
They have left those writings as a legacy for others to capitalize on.
Right. And nature to them was a major form of entertainment.
That's right. That's
a major, almost an exclusive form of entertainment. I don't like to use the word entertainment in a way because it almost slanderizes nature. It was a major form of sustenance. It became a form of entertainment because they didn't have the option of turning on the TV, turning on the computer.
And the people in the third world countries can more appreciate and accept nature, because I mean that's what they have and that's what they embrace and utilize. So we have 19 more minutes. Let's see how many poems we can get in.
Well, how about a little prose?
Huh?
I do prose too. Can we do a little prose?
What's that?
Prose is a form of writing that is more or less in the form of sentences, that is more or less in the form of a journal that has poetic inclinations to it, but it's not really as, it's more in a sense of, documentation that does not have the fluidity of poetry, but it still has the essence of spirituality. In other words, you might read,
if it enhances your life, it's okay. Why don't you get a sip of water so you can moisten your throat?
I'm fine.
Okay.
I'd like to use this as a way of reflecting on a contest now between the year 2013 and the year 1858, when Henry David Thoreau, who is probably the most prominent naturalist that has lived and probably could very well be regarded as the founder of conservation in our country today and natural love. He wrote many things, journals, encompassed millions and millions of words. He not only wrote poetry, but he wrote both. And one of the things I'd like to quote, I think this is really quite interesting to see his intimacy with nature. I'll use one which is more timely for the winter. And he would say, he would do things of this nature. And this is almost a verbatim extract from his journal. I would often walk 4 or 5 miles through the deepest snow because I had an engagement with an elm tree.
Mm.
So, in other words, Henry David Thoreau had a favorite elm tree that he would, and he would think, I want to go see the elm tree. And he would walk 3 or 4 miles through the deepest snow because he wanted to go visit his famous elm tree. So that is the winter thought. Now, let's think. I tell people when I write to them, think now the beauty of winter wonderlands and think soon the beauty of spring wonderlands. Poetry coming into my mind. Thank God for the people that could appreciate that in days gone by, which enforced in me the love that they had, which I try and live every day. Now, Henry David Thoreau was by woman, and it had to be in 1853, and he was sitting by the pond, and he was just sitting there by the pond for 3 or 4 hours. Mm-hmm. A neighbor happened to be watching Mr. Thoreau and was a little concerned about Mr. Thoreau's health and approached Mr. Thoreau and said, Henry, are you all right? You've been sitting by this pond, just staring at the pond for 4 hours. And he so wisely said, I'm perfectly okay, Margaret. I've been observing the bullfrogs for 4 hours. Now, I'm saying, to me, that is really indicative of not only an unhurried life, but much more importantly, a person that is observing the ongoings of nature on a very extremely intimate basis. Mm-hmm. Now, once again, not to critique our contemporary society, but Mr. Thoreau would be considered by today's standards as not spending his time resourcefully. It's really,
but you know, who is to say? That's a decision that each and every one of us has to make for ourselves. It's not for anybody else to dictate about, you know, whether that is spent wisely or not.
And I think that's a fair statement to say, but to think of sitting there watching bullfrogs for 4 or 5 hours, I know the feeling.
But he was,
he
was watching with an intention. And I'm sure if that conversation had continued, his intention would have been made known to who was querying, you know. So we have 13 minutes approximately, 13.54 minutes remaining. So we are looking to wrap up. And
about poetry? What can we say? I wrote to President Obama, and I said, I think it's important, President Obama, that maybe you conduct at the White House a forum on the significance of poetry and how it can tie us together, not only as a nation, but also as a world. And like I say, people in Ethiopia are smiling, just like people in Fordyce, Arkansas. So there's a commonality that poetry reveals. And I think that becomes somewhat subverted because of our quest for things that are otherwise. And,
yeah. Hold on, Robert. We only have 12 minutes remaining. So
you want me to do a couple more poems?
Yes, please. Because we are winding down to
time. I guess you're very interested in what. Let's see what we can do. How about Edgar Allan Poe? We do love poems. Edgar Allan Poe, Annabelle Lee.
Whatever. Follow your heart.
If you could name a more popular topic outside of nature for poetry in years gone by, I think it was love, with Valentine's Day coming up.
That's why I'm giving you the opportunity to choose. I don't know what you have, and we have a diverse listenership. So
I will need to give them something to ponder on. I will recite a poem, because in this day and age, I think we sometimes cheapen and we commercialize relationships with people, and we forget what real, true romance is. Edgar Allan Poe wrote this poem called Annabelle Lee, and I recite this poem, and I said, well, with a name like Annabelle Lee, it sounds like a young lady I would be very interested to know just because of her name. And it was called Annabelle Lee. It was many, many years ago in this kingdom by the sea that there a maiden lived whom you may know by the name of Annabelle Lee. And this maiden lived with no other thought than to love and to be loved by me. She was a child, and I was a child in this kingdom by the sea, but we loved with a love that was more than love, me and my Annabelle Lee. And this was the reason, as all men know, a wind blew out of a cloud, chilling and killing my Annabelle Lee. So her high-born neighbors came and bore her away from me. For neither the angels of heaven above, nor the demons down under the sea, could ever dissever my soul from the soul of Annabelle Lee. For the moon never beams without bringing me dreams of my beautiful Annabelle Lee, and the stars never rise, but I see the bright eyes of my beautiful Annabelle Lee. So all the night tide, I lie down by her side. My darling, my life and my bride, there in the kingdom of sea, buried in the sea. So I just read that poem and I listen and I'm saying, this was a poem that was really written about what we call love. Shakespeare did it in Romeo and Juliet, but a poem that was very intense, very, very passionate. And it would take somebody to experience that passion to write a poem like that.
So, I think we have time just for one more piece, please.
Oh, one more piece. Okay. Let me say this. I will give you a couple definitions of what poetry is. Carl Sandburg said, poetry is the sliver of a moonbeam on the belly of a frog. The white belly of a frog, the sliver of a moonbeam falling on the white belly of a frog. That, to Carl Sandburg, was poetry. Preceding that, Emily Dickinson said, poetry is that which derives amazing sense from ordinary meaning and utter so immense. By that, Emily Dickinson said, poetry has the capacity of deriving amazing sense from ordinary meaning and utter, which is an exotic, exclusive herb. It has the capacity of drawing out the beauty of things that are ordinary and things that are extraordinary. It all goes according to how the heart feels and how the heart relates to things in life that you can't buy on at Saks Fifth Avenue. That's my interpretation of poetry, and I know I stand to be maybe questioned for that, but poetry is many things for many different people. But for me, this is the poetry that works. And thank you so much for giving me time to express.
Before you go, though, what closing thoughts you want to leave the listeners with? I mean, there's somebody who probably came on, not sure why they tune in, but they came on anyhow. They're probably confused, unsure, or any number of things.
Oh, okay.
What insight would you like to leave them with, please?
Well, the thought I will leave people with today, if you're write, express yourself in a form that you will sit and write and get yourself a piece of paper and a pencil. Doesn't have to be a fancy pen, or doesn't have to be an exclusive piece of parchment. And write your feelings, whether they're sad or happy, and then sort them out, and then you have them for yourself. And that's important. I think that's important. You know, poetry isn't all happiness. Poetry is the revelations of your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And when you write them out and when you sort them out, if you share them with other people, that's important. But if you share them with yourself, that's extremely, extremely beneficial.
All right. Thank you. One last question.
Okay.
Have you ever gotten any requests? Let's say somebody say, here is this event or activity taking place. I would love for you to do a poem for that.
A poem for somebody that wants to share their poems?
No. Let's say somebody, let's speak, you had just spoke about Valentine's Day. Have you ever got a request where somebody came and say, I want for you to write a poem for my husband or my wife or my girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. Have you ever gotten those requests?
Oh, I would never do that.
Okay.
Oh, in other words, write a poem for another person?
Yeah, because they need to be an expression of themselves.
No, you know what I would say to them? You write the poem and I will listen to it and I will not say it's bad or it's good. But
that's
if you
right.
say, I'm... I would not say that. I don't, you see.
Because
I
it's an expression of oneself.
Right. Don't ask me to write another poem for somebody else. I don't want to do that. I would say write what you want, and if the word is not spelled right, that's okay, but if the message is conveyed, that's most important.
Wonderful.
If people want to contact me, they're more than free to contact me on my cell phone. Can I give it to you?
You can give it to them. Go ahead.
Okay. If people want to contact me, they can contact me at Pausing for Poetry. It's Robert Garavel, 203-482-7000.
203-482-7097. That's Robert Garrigo, 203-482-7097. And I'd love to hear from people on their thoughts on poetry.
All right.
Everybody has something to say, and that's what is important.
All right. Well, thank you so very much. I know your time is valuable. And today with Super Bowl, everybody is out there celebrating. So I'm glad you took the time to spend with us.
I am so happy that I had the opportunity of sharing my night with the folks and yourself. It was time that really went by almost like the tides of the ocean. And it was really a nice experience. And thank you so much for
giving me the opportunity
of talking about poetry and its meaning. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're very welcome. And I just encourage the listeners to share this link and this episode with your family members, your friends. Put it on your Twitter. Put it on your Facebook. Just share it. Because just as you heard Mr. Garvel mention about the importance of writing, it's like the same thing I say every week to you guys about journaling. You got to journal, write your thoughts and your experience down so you can at least get your creative juice going. And as always, remember that you are born for destiny. And do not allow anyone or anything to deprive you from that. I remind you to join me on Wednesday morning when my guest will be Mr. Barnes from D.C. And he's going to be talking to you about the funding for your small business. Stay blessed, and I'll see you on Wednesday.
What's the plight that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart?
Thank you,
Jesus.
Thank you.
I speak.
purpose tonight. Hallelujah. You will open that business and direct it. Hallelujah. To my destiny. I know what I'm here for. Tell the Lord, thank you. Hallelujah. For every trial that came with the slave. Hallelujah. For every struggle that came with the slave. I'm mighty grateful. I said I'm mighty grateful. See the breaking of day. It's destiny. That I know what I know, what I know, what I'm here for. Yeah. Oh, for showing me to the Lord tonight and directing me. Hallelujah. To my destiny. A strong God. You may not be able to touch it right now. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Hallelujah. Can you see it? Can you feel it? Everybody, you're going into a new dimension tonight. You'll never ever see it again the same way. You'll never ever touch it again the same way. You've been called with a great call. It's a monumental call. You've been called to change nations and generations. Come on and praise your God.